No, I'd just like to thank my wife. This is in case you have any questions. Well, I really hope that I'm going to answer your questions. I suppose you hope so, too. High school is a very volatile subject when it comes to homeschooling. There are many people who are very confident homeschooling through the early grades and even junior high, and then get to high school, and suddenly things start to become a whole different story. Things start crashing down. Peer pressure is enhanced. People start looking at, what about post-secondary? How are we going to make it in the world? Will he ever get a job? Will she ever amount to anything? And so high school is an area that needs attention. What I want to do today is give it some of the attention from just from the perspective of what can be done that's different from just going back to school, essentially, whether you're going back to school in a school or going back to school at home through correspondence or other things, but also look at what essentially a high school education is. And if we look at really what a high school education needs to be, it might arm us to make our decisions perhaps definitely more cautiously and perhaps in a different direction from the way the stream is flowing. The reality is you amount to, if you have children in high school or nearing high school, you amount to at best 20%, probably more like 15% of 1% of the school population. Homeschooling in this province, basic traditional homeschooling, is still only about 1% of the population. And high school homeschoolers is very, you know, probably 15-20% of that. So we're a very small part of the population, and when you see the stream flowing by and all the fish swimming by, it's easy to just kind of go, well, all right, and go down the same stream, because it seems to be the status, well, it is the status quo, and inertia is certainly in that direction. We have to really, in a sense, take a step back, take a step outside of our culture and our time, to have a look at what education really is. How many of you have ever heard me talk about classical education? Okay, good. A smattering, but I might have to just do a little bit of a, you'll forgive me if I just review what a classical approach is. I've got notes here, and I'm going to try to stick to the notes. As I was saying to Marlene this morning, my greatest handicap has got to do with something that I do very easily. I speak easily. But it's my greatest handicap, because then I don't pay attention to notes, and first thing you know, I'm off on a tangent. And anyway, I won't tell you my problems. You also probably have a handout. Do you have a handout? No. I sent AHEA a handout about a month and a half ago, which they printed, and is probably in the building somewhere. But we'll see. That might arrive. Marlene just left. It'll arrive before we're done. I'm more comfortable without a handout anyway, because then you look at me rather than trying to figure out where I am on the paper. So. But the handout will have a lot of these notes in at least in a basic form, but I also left a margin for you to keep notes in, but that's all history now. There's a real tendency in our culture to think of high school as a time to just finally take that final mad dash out the door. Remember when you were in high school? You're getting grade 11, 12, and everybody's saying, you're almost done, right? And that's really the mentality. It's a time to get done. In fact, it's a time to really relish these years. They are extremely precious. Young people in adolescence really come into a time in their life where they are like water, like water. Adolescents are really like water. They like to conform to the vessel that they're poured into. And so you get adolescents who tend to start looking like all the other adolescents. They want to be noticed, and yet at the same time they want to be like everyone else. And it's really very simple. They're trying to discover how they fit in the world. And part of it is emotional at that point, and part of it is intellectual. And the emotional part doesn't take over if the intellectual portion is stimulated. So what we really need to do with adolescents, people in their grade 9, 10 to 12 years, is really stimulate them intellectually so that they can discover the world around them and therefore come to a better understanding of who they are, what they're called to, you know, start to understand their faith better because it fits with reason, it actually makes sense, you know, that creation makes all the sense in the world. It's not just another theory like evolution, but it actually is so logical and pure. So as we get their minds to conform to the vessel that they're poured into, then emotionally they don't feel that same need to have multiple earrings and tattoos and funny clothes. I'm already off my paper. There's a tendency also in these years to look towards the world of work prematurely, too soon. A very good friend of mine who's also was a student that I facilitated for a number of years, who graduated from high school as a homeschooler, went off to university, got a classical education, has come back with no real credentials in the world. Came back from a four-year liberal arts program where he learned how to think and reason and gained insight, drank deeply from great thinkers throughout history and developed a real, even an ability to read some texts in Latin and Greek. But he has no credentials. He came back to Edmonton and got a job in a bakery. But say, his position is, why would you ever get an education just to get a job? Why waste this wonderful, fruitful time? Now, he's talking post-secondary as well as high school. Especially at high school, we should not be thinking of education as a means to a job. Education is a means to, and I know these just sound like nice words, but it's a means to a life. And when you've got a life, take a look around you. Those of you who are in the workforce, which is probably many of you, you see many men, the people who really are valuable in the workforce are people who have a life. And not necessarily skilled at everything. But if they've got an ability to communicate with people, if they've got an ability to reason, to take something and analyze it, make sense of it, take something brand new and adapt to it, they are valuable in the workforce. And that's an aside. If you just get an education, even a very good classical education, just to get a job in the workforce, you're missing the point. You get the education for the sake of the education itself, and the rest will come. So, as students come into this age of reason, this rich time, it really is, by the time your children are in grade 9, it's time to pause and very carefully reflect on how we're going to spend these years, because they're going to whip by, right, Veronica? Just whip by. And first thing you know, our daughter is pushing 23 and has her first grandson, and just hardly feels like we had enough time with her. So, what they need, as much more than anything else, is to recognize I'm going to go back to my notes. They need to recognize the function of family life, first and foremost. Now, you didn't come here to hear that, right? You know that family life is important to you and to your children. But, unfortunately, our culture is riddled with a secular humanism, you'll hear it called as, that says that there are other things that are far more important, like money, how good a job you can get. Even my own children are under the peer pressure of what kind of work are you going to be able to do when you get out of high school. And above everything, they have to learn that sacrifice for their own family, sacrifice for God, is at the core of their life. Let's look at how children learn. I need to take just a jump to grades 1, 2, and 3, which are essentially school, period. Grade 1 is the grammatical mode. That's the age where children just memorize easily and learn. And it usually happens from about the age of 5 to 12. And that's, you know, elementary school in the school system. At that point in life, children can absorb all kinds of stuff, and it's a great time to teach them math times tables, teach them grammar, teach them spelling. They learn all the basics at that point. When my father was a child, most people quit school at grade 6 because they had all the basics of an education. And essentially, it was true of a basic education. So by the time children finish grade 6, they've got all the technical things down. I remember actually finishing grade 6 myself. I remember being at the end of grade 6 and going, wow, I understand all the things that adults understand now. I noticed at that point that my vocabulary was the same as an adult vocabulary. I used the same words. I suddenly realized that I understood everything that adults said, even talking among themselves. And that's essentially true. Unfortunately, my father finished school at grade 8, and that was it, never did get a higher education, and this is the real opportunity that the high school years give us. And at about age 12 or 13, 14, 15, we come into what's called the logical stage. And I'll do this very quickly. This is really an encapsulation of what classical education is. But it's called classical because it's endured forever. Universities today are based on a classical model, but they've all moved away. Our whole education system in the last 100 years has totally changed into something entirely different. I may take some time to talk about that. But essentially, a student at about grade 7, you know, that rebellious stage where people say you can't do anything with these junior high students. I was told when I was a teacher that, it was standard practice, and I imagine it still is, to not introduce anything new from grade 7 to 9 into the curriculum. You basically learn all the new material you're going to learn up to grade 6, and then in junior high, you basically still work with the same stuff, but you don't really expect junior high students to learn anything. And I was told at university that their brains are mush. You know, they just become a ball of hormones, and they can't think. They're just emotional, and blah, and blah, and blah. And that's how they're pegged. Uh-uh, not true. By the time they come to about the age of 12 or 13, they enter the age of reason. They start to become logical in their thinking, and they start to challenge the things around them. You notice they become adversarial, but it's not adversarial because they have something against you. It's because they really want to understand. They're really coming to that point where they need to understand. And so what do we do in the school system? We keep giving them memorization stuff the way we did for the first 6 years of their schooling, and they rebel against it because it's not the way they're printed to learn now. The Lord has made them to come into this stage and start making something of the information, not memorizing it. And so we end up with frustrated kids and frustrated teachers because it's not working. But it's a great opportunity to start to develop their ability to reason. How do you teach it? If you did nothing with your children when they're age 13 to 15 except read excellent books and talk, you would be doing them a huge service. Now, there's some of them in here, and you don't want them to know that, I'm sorry. And if it's tape, don't give them this tape. But really, that's what's needed. They need more than anything else to discuss with someone older than them, preferably their parent. Discussion becomes the core of learning in the junior high years. And so it can be a time where some of those other things relax a little or a lot. Now, people say, well, what about writing? I got a confession to make. Actually, it's my wife's confession, but I'll tell you. Our son, who's now 19, did virtually no writing at all. Don't hand this tape to Alberta Learning either. Until he was in about grade 10. And then he was reading excellent books, and we started to notice that he wanted to write. It wasn't something that was ever forced on him. We had given him basics down in grade 4 and 5. I mean, we taught him how to write and what a sentence consists of, and we did, you know, language arts through learning, where you emulate somebody else's writing and you do all the punctuation. That all worked. So he knew the mechanics of it, but we hadn't really pushed a lot of writing. Now, I'm not saying that's the way to go. It just happens to be the way my wife did it. And we had reasons for it, many reasons, but that's beside the point. But the point is that they that Simon, whoops, said his name. Now, Freedom of Information Act, I'm going to probably be in trouble, right? Got to the point where he wanted to emulate the thinking of, well, the one I really noticed was J.R.R. Tolkien. He got into The Lord of the Rings, read all that, read The Hobbit, Silmarillion, and he started writing like Tolkien, using the same kinds of turns of phrase, and he became eloquent overnight. But not because he was eloquent himself, but he was modeling. And modeling is the greatest form, the most effective form of learning, from very small to very large. That's why you get so frustrated with your children, because they're just like you. If you didn't laugh, you're in trouble. And so he was modeling after a great writer. And then as he began to, we started to do a great books program where he was reading the ancients and not understanding the ancient Greek mythology at all, but just a little thread was there and he could then discuss it, and then a little more of a thread, and then he reads later writers and discovers that, wow, they all refer to the ancient Greeks. And as he went, he discovered all of our literature through the centuries has as its beginning as its reference point these ancient, the Iliad and the Odyssey, these ancient Greek myths, which in themselves, have merit and which in themselves have a lot of error. But, you know, this is a 16-year-old. He can understand what's true and what's not. The key is he learns how to perceive what is true and what is not, develops the mechanism to discover truth. You don't ever discover truth by having somebody tell you what's true and what's false. You discover truth by chewing on what people say. And the more that you discuss the things you're reading, that's why it starts at that logical stage. The more you discuss it, especially with somebody who's worthy of your time and your thinking, your thoughts, your parents, the more you discuss it, the more you are able to recognize truth and fiction. And then you can do it on your own. You have as your mentors these classic writers. So that was the logical stage. The rhetorical, this was going to be brief. Well, it was, just with a lot of tangents. The rhetorical, grade three, if you will, of an education until the 20th century. Grade three was rhetorical, which really, that stage lasts forever. That's the age of expression. That's the point that our son sort of crept into and suddenly wanted to write like Tolkien. People actually become interested in poetry and music and expression. They want to debate. They want to get into a real conversation with people. They want to express themselves to the world. You see, it's what we're designed for. It's also sometimes called the community stage. And all of us, well-meaning people, want to make a difference in the world. We are called to make a difference in the world. And sometimes it's a big difference and sometimes it's a small one, but we're all called to make the world a little bit better. And that's what the rhetorical stage is all about. That's what is happening inside a 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old that wants to come to life, that wants expression. And so what do we do in the school system? I'm not banging the school system. I'll talk a little later about the reason it has problems. But what we do is we continue to teach them in the grammatical mode, the way they did in grade 1, 2, 3, 4. Memorize this stuff, regurgitate it for the exam, go on to the next level. Memorize this, put it on an exam. And university, memorize this, put it on the exam, go to the next level. Our entire school system has become very, very limited. I mean, there is certainly information that we should memorize and know in order to be able to do a particular job. But it's all become training as opposed to really learning, really being educated, really being elevated by what we have learned. I'll just talk a little bit about hazards to learning, just to put this in a bit of a frame. I don't want to come across as just bashing the system and trying to hold up something different. Some of the hazards are that schooling in our culture is accountable as a business. that make sense to you? Culturally, as a people, as through our government, we give money to individuals to teach children. And so they have to be accountable for the money that they're given to do the job. How do we hold them? How can they let us know that they're actually doing a job? Well, how do you show results? How do you show that you really have learned something? Sorry? Testing. Yeah. And so students have to write a test. Now, you don't want students to do badly on their test because then it looks like you're not accountable. So even if your students have learned something, how do you prove it really? Well, a test, okay, that's about the best measure we've got, right? So you have them write a test. And so you make sure that they can do well on the test. So you teach them the stuff that's going to be on the test and have them clear that this is going to be on the test, so memorize it and do well on the test. And so we're accountable. The problem is, education should never have been a business. And in the 20th century, it really grew into it, and it's just escalating. It is big business, unfortunately. Big budget, and obviously big accountability. But the more you demand accountability, the more you narrow what you... There is simply a narrowing of what you can account for. You can't really prove that I'm wise, right? Especially the way I'm talking. You can't prove that I would make a good father or husband. You can't prove that I've got a clear conscience. You can't prove that I would be honest in business. But you can prove that I know that 1 + 1 = 3. Or something like that. Just checking to see if you're still listening. Right? There are certain things you can prove, so we focus on the things we can prove, and in the process, we pay too little attention to the things we can't prove, because there's a limited amount of time. Remember, these years are precious, and even in the school system, they're precious. I'm not saying they're not learning anything there, but there's a great emphasis on things that I don't think are the best use of time. If you're listening to this tape, I'm sorry for doing that. Also, other hazards to learning in the system are accessibility to a large scale. We have to make